Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
Now, straight from the headlines, we bring you the latest top newsmakers.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at the San Diego Performance Academy. My guest today is Kelly Fuller. Kelly is a consultant with the Protect Our Communities Foundation right here in East County. It's a nonprofit. It's a citizens group and an environmental group that's been involved in issues involving some of the big energy projects out here in East County and their impacts on communities. Kelly, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me today, Miriam.
Now, you have also been a consultant for the American Bird Conservancy back in Washington, D.C. before you came here. Tell us a little bit about what you were involved in back there, Kelly.
I was the wing campaign coordinator for American Bird Conservancy, and there what I was doing is we were working to make wind energy safe for birds, because unfortunately at the moment, wind energy, depending on the credible estimate that you look at, is killing anywhere from 400,000 to close to 500,000 birds per year. And there have been lower estimates, but they're not looking at a wide enough source of data.
Yeah, those are based on basically the data that the industry itself provides. And of course, you know, the real numbers could very well be higher. Now, the Obama administration has been pushing forward wind energy and solar energy for the purpose of addressing climate change, which is certainly a noble goal. However, we're finding that there's a lot of unintended consequences, and it isn't just birds. Tell us what's going on now with bats.
Yes, it's very unfortunate. Bats are very necessary because of their importance for pollination, for agriculture, for pest reduction, and unfortunately, they are killed in large numbers by wind energy facilities. There are various estimates. You'll see 600,000, 800,000 killed per year, and it's thought to actually be probably much larger than that, again, yeah, because of the problems of trying to get the estimates. And there's some thought they may actually be attracted to the blades, and that in some cases their lungs may actually explode when they get close to the blades because of changes in the air pressure.
Yeah, the barometric pressure. It isn't just wind that's the problem either, although obviously it's a huge issue with the birds, and especially eagles and birds of prey, flying into the blades, as we've seen at places like Altamont, where thousands of eagles were killed. But there's some new data emerging that's troubling regarding certain solar facilities. What can you tell us about that?
Starting this summer, information started coming out at solar facilities in the desert, especially in California, that birds were being found dead at them. And at various kinds of solar facilities, both the photovoltaic and the concentrating solar. And in some cases, birds were apparently colliding with the solar panels. Birds were flying through the air at a facility called Ivanpah, where mirrors concentrate their rays onto a solar power tower facility.
Yeah, that's the one where they wound up actually being burned. They were just incinerated.
They were burned, and there's real concern that when you look at that facility, if you're there, you see what look like almost puffs of smoke or steam.
Wow.
It's really amazing what's going on there. There are insects have been reported falling almost like rain there.
Very troubling because insects, of course, are the food source for lots of birds and lizards and other kinds of wildlife.
Yes, and it's not just collisions. And at the facilities, the concentrating solar facilities, the photovoltaic facilities, what's happening is the theory is that the birds appear to be thinking that these facilities are like large lakes, and they're calling this a lake effect. And they come down for a landing thinking it's water.
So they're actually attracted to it,
yes,
which is even worse than
putting something that's an
obstacle.
In addition, birds are dying on the fences. Birds have been reported dying, getting tangled in netting that is placed over construction equipment in order to try and keep the birds from nesting on it. So there are all kinds of problems are being reported. And right now, we're not even seeing systematic searches of these facilities because no one ordered those. They didn't expect to need to do that. These are just what they call incidental finds where somebody happens to be walking around the facilities and they see dead birds. So the number of birds being killed could be larger than what's even been reported so far.
Yeah, certainly places like the ones on tribal land out here in East County, we can't even access the data, so we have absolutely no idea how many are being killed.
Yeah, and there you're talking about wind facilities, and I want to talk about the national picture. This is a problem across the country, and it's why whenever you see figures of how many birds or bats are killed across the country by wind power, you need to take it with a big grain of salt, which is because we don't have access to the data. All we have is access to what the companies are willing to report. And even if they report it to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, you as a member of the public may not even be able to get your hands on that data. You can try and get it. You can submit what's called a Freedom of Information Act request to the federal government and ask for the data that the federal government's been given. But you may not get it. And I say this as somebody who has submitted many of these on behalf of the American Bird Conservancy.
You just submitted one of these involving the approval on Weipai tribal land here in East County of a section of Tule Wind that would be on tribal land. And the raptor studies, bird studies that were done said this thing isn't a threat to eagles. And yet, tell us what you found in your public record search.
The Protect Our Communities Foundation has submitted several Freedom of Information Act requests to get as much information as possible about what's going on at the Tule Wind projects and other projects in San Diego and Imperial Counties. And we got back on the Tule Wind projects a number of internal emails from the Fish and Wildlife Service. And their staff repeatedly said, there are problems out on that ridgeline where this second phase of Tule Wind, the one that the Bureau of Indian Affairs has just approved, that there's high eagle use, that there is an eagle nest right by where one of the turbines would be built. In fact, there were photos that they gave us.
With baby eagles in
baby
the nest.
Baby eagles, yeah, from the nest.
Threat.
Yeah, and so, you know, we've got evidence that there really is a problem out there and evidence that the Fish and Wildlife Service actually asked the Bureau of Indian Affairs to either move this project off the ridgeline or completely redesign it because the risk of two eagles was so high, and yet they've gone ahead. And
yeah, even more shocking is that they've gone ahead relying on data on eagles and other raptors from a study that was done by the discredited so-called expert David Bittner, who was just recently convicted in federal court of various violations involving the mishandling of eagles, taking an eagle without a permit. It turned out he wasn't licensed for years and years and years, and yet he was banding eagles and putting transmitters on them and refusing to this day, as far as I know, to turn over the data to the federal government about the tracking data from the transmitters that he put on these eagles. He gave it to the energy companies that hired him for these projects, but not to the Fish and Wildlife Service. How can this be?
That's a really good question. And it really remains to be seen what is going to happen with that data. He continues to be used as a consultant on projects in San Diego County. And
since his conviction?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
We just recently saw on another project, the Soytech project, solar projects in Boulevard. And right now it looks like the county of San Diego is perfectly willing to accept his data, even though they know it was gathered illegally. It is really going to take an outcry from the public to say to these agencies, you can't do this. You cannot accept data that was gathered illegally in your decision making. You need to get new studies. I think one of the problems is that for years, David Bittner and the Wildlife Research Institute in Ramona mm-hmm. were the only experts that were doing research in San Diego County. There wasn't really anybody else doing it down here. And so these agencies feel like they don't know where else to turn, which is silly because there are plenty of other biological experts that have licenses in California that could do the work. And agencies are slow to make changes unless the public demands it.
Yeah.
And the public is really going to have to stand up and push these agencies' feet to the fire to get this change
now,
made.
Now, Bittner took a huge amount of money, $600,000.
In 1 year.
Yeah, two-thirds of $1 million.
Another year in which that organization made over $1 million.
Wow. Now, yet he's not the only one that has a conflict of interest. Tell me, I understand there's another expert that you came across with the county, a revolving door where somebody...
Well, there certainly are. If you are a renewable energy company, you certainly know that there are firms that you can hire out there, consultants, that are going to not ask you a lot of questions, that are going to put out results that are favorable to you.
But also the county itself has this revolving door where, unlike Congress, where there's a conflict of interest policy, you cannot come before Congress for at least a year after you've left them and lobby on behalf of somebody. But that's not the case with the county. You can go right from working for the county to going to work for a company, or from working for a company to the next day being there doing the EIR for the county, as we saw with Blackwater, where they had a Blackwater lawyer come in and do that the next day. And there's been a similar instance, I understand.
There was somebody working for the county, working on a project that has since gone and to work for a developer.
Right.
Maybe just
coincidence, but certainly raises the suspicion that, perhaps there was a favor or a job offered or something, if a decision would go a certain way. So it's troubling. I mean, are you bothered that our county does not have a conflict of interest policy as even the federal government has for
there
Congress?
There definitely needs to be better conflict of interest policy at the county, because you should not be able to go from working in the planning department, reviewing these projects for the county, and then just turn around the next day and go to work for these developers.
Right.
You shouldn't be able to do that. It's a problem.
Now, Kelly, can you lay out for us the overall scale of what's proposed for East County in terms of these large-scale, industrial-scale renewable energy projects? Tule Wind is one of the largest, but it's by no means the only one.
There are many projects proposed, and right now, depending on how you define projects, because sometimes a developer will come in and define as one project something that has, say, three or four different locations.
Mm-hmm.
But depending on how you define as one project, there are probably anywhere from 15 to 25 renewable energy projects proposed in San Diego County right now. And that's just what's known to the planning department.
There a lot are of those others. Are in Boulevard. Give us a scope. Let's just pick out one town for an example.
Boulevard. It is thousands of acres, but I would say in the county as a whole, I'd say between 15 and it's over two dozen in the county as a whole. If you live Highway 67 or east, these projects are coming to you.
Yeah, we've seen them proposed certainly in places like Ramona, Pine Valley, Alpine, Boulevard,
Descanso, Valley Center, Borrego Springs, and they're going to keep coming. And folks need to know that there are alternatives to building these in the backcountry.
And what are the alternatives?
Well, there are many things that could be done instead, and it's one of the reasons that Protect Our Communities Foundation is working on this. Is not only are these projects enormously destructive to the backcountry in terms of taking up the natural resources, and they conflict with almost every backcountry planning group's community character and
plans. Now, they're massive in scale. These wind projects, for example, hundreds of turbines, 500 feet tall. That's like a 50-story building. How tall are some of these solar panels?
They are as tall as 2 to 3-story houses, and they can be enormously tall. Mm-hmm. Some of them have glare issues. There's all kinds of things. But we could be doing more rooftop solar. We could be doing more energy efficiency. Mm-hmm. We can be doing conservation. The county could be doing much more work to reduce climate change, greenhouse gas emissions through better transportation plans.
Yeah, mass transit.
Yeah, there's much more that could be done. We could be seeing some of the, and one of the things why we need to look at more rooftop solar is if we do more rooftop solar in the urban areas and the suburban areas, we shift the energy burden back towards the areas that are actually generating the energy need. Because part of the lack of justice in this is it's not the backcountry that is generating this energy demand.
Right. Most of the people out there are very self-sufficient. They're not using a lot of power.
Well, even if they are still on the grid, the energy needs of the backcountry is not the bulk of the energy demand in the county. And yet, you're not seeing these projects being proposed in La Jolla, in Tomar.
Yeah, that's a good point. There's a real economic justice issue here. I mean, what do you think would happen if they were to say, we're going to build a wind project up on Torrey Pines, it's really windy up here, and, you know, if we wipe out the seals at the beach and the seagulls and some views of these million-dollar houses up there, oh, well, that's the cost of green energy. I mean, they don't do that because they know people would sue them out there. They have a lot of money, right?
Yeah, there is a justice issue in that regard. In addition,
I know you've said that you believe they're targeting low-income communities.
They do target. Yes. They do target. And much as I think this is something where the backcountry communities, especially the really low-income backcountry communities such as Boulevard and Hacumba, you'll notice they're not targeting Julian so much with these.
Yeah,
and they tried, and they learned their lesson. There was a wind company several years ago that that did target Julian. They targeted a project on Vulcan Mountain. Julian rose up and knocked that thing down very quickly.
They did, as they did with the county trying to take over their fire department. They said, we don't want to do that. They got one guy there to donate, donate a whole lot of money to keep the fire department independent. So I think people are learning, don't mess with Julian.
Yeah, but Julian is a little better off than, say, Boulevard is.
And where two-thirds of the kids in the schools, I think, are on school lunch programs, or they're considered low-income.
The Boulevard-Kamba area has a lot in common with another area of the county that gets destructive energy projects proposed on a regular basis. And I'm thinking here of the South Bay, which regularly sees
Otay, Chula Vista.
Yeah, regularly sees destructive power plants proposed. Mm-hmm. And the Protect Our Communities Foundation is right now an intervener at the California Public Utilities Commission in the Pio Pico gas plant proposal. And we are fighting that tooth and nail and standing in solidarity with the border communities
against
that.
And I just heard that in the next few months that we may see a revival of efforts by SDG&E or Cogentrix to push forward the Quail Brush power plant.
It may come back.
It was given basically a one-year pass, and now that 1 year is about to expire. What a lot of people don't understand, I think, is the link between, you know, the wind energy and what happens in the backcountry and these gas-powered peaker power plants. They're justified by saying that, well, we have to have the gas plants because the wind doesn't blow all the time.
Yeah, and that we will see more of these peaker plants in order to that is one thing that people often don't understand is that if you want wind power, you're essentially saying that you want to see more of these gas peaker plants.
And we should note that out in Ocotillo, the wind hardly ever seems to blow. The figures are coming in from FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, and, you know, we're finding that the wind is way below what was promised. The amount of power has been a fraction in the first two quarters that are available of what was promised in order to get the subsidies for those big energy companies. Now, Kelly, your organization has also voiced concerns about something that all San Diego County residents should be concerned about, and that's the danger of wildfire that's potentially posed by some of these projects. Tell us about that.
Yes, there is a great risk of wildfire from these projects. Unfortunately, wind turbines do burn.
And one just did, in fact, just a couple weeks ago out in Campo. It burst into flames and started a wildfire that came very close to homes out there.
Yes, ironically, the Bureau of Indian Affairs approved the lease for the second phase of the Tule Wind Project on the exact same day that there was a wind turbine fire on the Campo Reservation.
And how prepared are the fire agencies out there to deal with a fire that would start at a wind farm? We've heard a lot of problems out there where they've had station closures and the foam truck isn't stored in Boulevard. It's way out in Pine Valley because the Boulevard station hasn't been open often enough. The foam truck, which, of course, is supposed to be provided by SDG&E as mitigation to battle electrical fires.
They're going to have to use air resources, if very definitely, because there is no way that they're going to be able to get fire trucks.
Where are the closest air resources stationed?
Well, the air resources, they're not right there, and they're not owned by the fire district that is contracted, because the on this second phase that was just approved, the San Diego Rural Fire Protection District is contracted to provide fire protection because the WEAPI do not have, the owner of the project does not, cannot provide it.
But Rural Fire has,
no air. So they would have to get it. Yeah. They would have to get it from Cal Fire.
Ramona.
Yeah.
So what happens if we have a big wildfire somewhere else and those planes are already deployed far away?
That would be a big problem. this could burn right straight into San Diego County, or they could try and get it from San Diego County. But again, if the San Diego County air resources were already deployed someplace else, it would be an enormous problem.
And what if it happens at night when they can't fly?
Again, all of these things are potential terrible problems.
Yeah, there's air tankers, but they have to come from far away. They're not always available. And if it's too windy or something,
again, there's also a problem for the actual firefighter resources. If you look at the agreement and the record of decision attachments for this, they are going to provide not any additional firefighters, but money for a paramedic. That's very nice, but they need to provide additional firefighters because, again, they're going to be relying on a district. What happens if this occurs during the off season when there are additional firefighters that are already off contract? Yeah, so again, you look at this and you say there are all these tremendous problems and you're putting these people at risk because fire season does not obey the limits of the calendar anymore. We pretty much have a year-round fire season.
Yeah, in every way, we've seen the Harris Fire in 2007 that was fueled by 100-mile-an-hour winds. I was right there when that one started, and it was amazing how fast that thing moved. It was catching up on your car as you were driving as fast as you could down the highway to get away from it. So how are they going to stop a fire that's fueled by winds anywhere near that fast? If you have 100 wind turbines, each one with a couple hundred gallons or more of flammable lubricating oil in there.
It's very frightening, and the potential for disaster is huge. And it's not just that they're putting at risk the people that live there. There are campgrounds, two campgrounds in McCain Valley.
Right. One road in, one road out.
That's right. And so you have got people that are going to be back there in those campgrounds. And are they going to be able to get the campers out? I mean, those people are going to be at great risk.
And if it would just jump beyond McCain Valley Boulevard, the backcountry, of course.
These fires, as we all know from the history, fires that start in the backcountry go roaring into the more populated areas of San Diego County.
Now, you raised this concern, or Donna Tisdale, others with the Protect Our Communities Foundation, raised this with the Board of Supervisors. Supervisor Jacob has said that fires are horrific issue with these things. And she voted no on the county wind ordinance, largely because of the fiery danger. But her colleagues voted yes, and so we now have a county wind ordinance that would allow even more of these things in the most fire-prone areas of the county. Now, you have a challenge going to the wind ordinance, I understand.
We do, and, you know, I can't talk about active litigation, but we do have a challenge that's still going, yes.
Interesting. Very good. Yeah. Thank you.
But I'd like to talk about, kind of step away for a minute from kind of the focus on, you know, what are we fighting to what are we supporting? Because I think that often gets lost. The Protect Our Communities Foundation supports the San Diego Sierra Club's Run with the Sun campaign. In fact, we have financially supported that campaign. That is a rooftop solar campaign working very actively to get more rooftop solar. In addition to that, it also works to get more energy efficiency. So to make certain that buildings are retrofitted so they don't need to use as much power. And people sometimes don't realize how much rooftop solar potential we've got in California. And to just give one example, there was a recent study that showed that Los Angeles County alone could power half of California with its rooftop solar potential.
Yeah. So why are we not doing that? Why are we seeing this push at the federal level and the state level for these enormously destructive projects?
Right now, we are in a transition period where we have great opportunity for the old way of being to die away and a new way of being to come into power. And the utility companies are terrified of rooftop solar because rooftop solar prices are dropping. And even if you don't have money to put it on your roof yourself, you can go down to Home Depot or Lowe's or these other places, and there are companies there that will install it on your roof and pay for that yourself, and you just pay them for the power.
Which is why the utilities have been fighting this.
They're terrified because they know that their way of doing business is going away. And so if they go and they build all these big power plants and all the big transmission lines that have to go with them,
in coordination with the big energy companies, and it's interesting that a lot of the big oil companies have diversified and gotten into wind, industrial wind and solar now. So it's really big oil lobbying.
They
Congress
have, and some of them are getting out of that as well. But so it's kind of that picture kind of goes back and forth. But I would just say is that if we go in to our backcountry and we put all of these big projects in now, it's kind of silly because we don't have to do that because the picture is changing. It really is moving towards rooftop solar. And the price is coming down, and we really don't have to destroy our backcountry in order to do something about climate change. And it comes down to, you know, how do we want to be remembered? Do we want to be remembered as the generation that destroyed the backcountry in order to do something about climate change? Or do we want to be remembered as the generation that was smart enough, that figured out how to do something about climate change and how to save backcountry and its beautiful views, its wildlife, its rural communities for future generations? We really can make this work, but we've got to be smart enough to do it. And that's the opportunity that's in front of us right now.
Well, Kelly, thank you so much. What can listeners out there do if they're concerned about this? What's the one thing that they can do to take action?
Well, they can get in touch with us. Be happy to, you know, help them out.
ProtectOurCommunities.org?
ProtectOurCommunities.org. There is one, that's the simplest thing to do is get in touch with us. If they're particularly concerned about Thule Wind, there's going to be an opportunity coming up. We don't know quite when it is, but they will be able to comment on the Eagle Take permit for that facility once that comes out.
Let us know, and we'll get that up on our
absolutely.
Site.
Absolutely.
And you also have some lawsuits moving forward. I believe there's one coming up in court in February.
That's right. On Thule Wind, there will be a hearing on February 20th.
Very good. People can also let their elected officials know their
absolutely.
Feelings about this.
Absolutely. It's always a good thing to do.
Very good. Well, Kelly, I want to thank you so much for joining us here today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
Thank you so much for having me here.
You're listening to East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
This is Ed Barena with this week's Local Government Report. On January 8th, Helix Water Board and its Lake Committee will hold a joint meeting at 2 p.m. Performance trends and the status of cabins, fishing, and camping will be among the items open for discussion. The Helix Water Board recently voted to spare Lake Jennings from closing, but only for a year pending the committee's further study. The meeting will be held at the district's headquarters on University Avenue in La Mesa. New business before the Santee City Council on January 8th at City Hall will include authorization of utility undergrounding on the Prospect Corridor Improvement Project, changes to storm drain improvements, also a shopping cart abandonment workshop apparently targeting the homeless. Lemon Grove's council will discuss its priorities for 2014 in a workshop open to the public during the council's meeting on January 7th at City Hall. The Lakeside Community Planning Group will hold an open house before its next meeting on January 14th for the public to view proposed projects in the Lakeside area. Plans will be on display for 30 minutes prior to the 6:30 meeting at the Lakeside Community Center. County supervisors meet on the 7th and the 8th. On the 8th, the agenda includes consideration of appropriations to construct a Sweetwater Loop Trail in Bonita and Spring Valley, as well as sale of surplus property in Spring Valley and help for local businesses to clean up contaminated properties. There are many more items on the supervisor's agenda that may be of interest, and you can find the full agendas at the county supervisor's website.
This is Miriam Raftery with a weather report. If you're traveling outside our area, you may have a long wait. Over 3,000 flights have been canceled nationwide due to an extreme cold front known as a polar vortex. The severe weather system is breaking all records, with temperatures dipping to a frosty 68 degrees below zero in parts of the Midwest, also bringing icy cold weather to the Northeast and single-digit temperatures to the South. Atlanta, Georgia was colder than Moscow today, and Memphis, Tennessee was chillier than Anchorage, Alaska. Fortunately, warm, balmy weather remains in the forecast here in sunny San Diego and East County, with highs expected to hover around 70 all week long. And if you're thinking of heading to the beaches, the County of San Diego has just announced a new app for cell phones so you can look up surf reports and water quality information at local beaches. Aren't you glad you're living in San Diego?
Have you ever had to take your break in a linen closet, sharing space with toxic chemicals and carts piled high with linens and cleaning supplies? Had no place to sit and rest, no fresh air, no restroom, no access to food and water? Rosa has. Rosa cleans 16 hotel rooms a day for poverty wages, no affordable health care, no voice on the job, and is forced to take her break in a crowded linen closet. She has been told, just be glad you have a job. Rosa's story is but one of thousands. Stories involving grocery workers, greenskeepers, janitors, sales clerks, and many others. People whose jobs condemn them to making do or not on minimum wages, often in substandard working conditions, without affordable health care or with no health care at all. Members of the Interfaith Committee for Worker Justice of San Diego County are working to change those stories and share them with the public in hopes of inspiring people to join them in speaking out against injustice. On Sunday, January 5th, Elizabeth Maldonado Robinson, Program Coordinator for the Interfaith Committee for Worker Justice, will share stories of her committee's work at the United Church of Christ in La Mesa on Kelton Avenue at 8:30 and 10 a.m. The public is invited for her presentation to learn how the Interfaith Committee for Worker Justice is working to help working families, providing a moral presence in low-wage workers' struggles for just wages, benefits, as well as treatment and working conditions, immigrant justice, and halting of modern slavery. You can read more at www.icwj.org. This is Nori Robbins reporting for East County Magazine and KNSJ, your network for social justice.
This is a public service announcement from East County Magazine. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts provide important information about much more than wildfires. In these winter months, you can receive free alerts via email or Twitter on your mobile phone about emergencies such as flash floods, road closures, heavy snow, and other severe weather alerts, as well as wildfires, traffic reports, and more. You can sign up for this free public service at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Indians.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment.
This is Miriam Raftery, guest hosting the Bookshelf today, and that's because the tables are turned. I'm interviewing our host of Bookshelf, Raina Menashe.
Besides hosting East County Magazine's Bookshelf program on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Raina is also a professional social worker, author, university instructor, and actress. Her first novel, Twice Begun, was a finalist in the 2013 San Diego Book Awards, and her new novel, Silent Bird, won the Outstanding Fiction Award from the Southern California Writers Conference. Raina is also education director of the Kronos Theater Group, and she's performed in theaters and festivals throughout San Diego for the last 20 years. One of her original educational plays, The Brain Game, was the recipient of an innovative grant by the First Five Commission of San Diego. Her blog is titled Life Goes On, and we just try to keep up.
Raina, welcome to our show.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here and sitting in the other chair.
Now, I'm here because I want to let everybody know about the launch of your newest novel, which is called Silent Bird. And tell us about the big event that you have coming up to launch it.
Well, I have a book launch scheduled at Mysterious Galaxy Bookstore, which is one of the independent bookstores left in San Diego. Mm-hmm. It's on January 11th at 2 p.m.,
That's
and it
Saturday.
Is open to the public.
Very good. Now, the book, really, I've been looking through it, and it's all about a young woman who goes to France seeking to reinvent herself and her search to discover intimacy and overcome some shadows of her own past. And yet, like so many of your books, you have so much warmth and humor and such depth of character. You really do an amazing job. I'm wondering if you could open by reading us a passage.
Sure. This will be a short conversation between the protagonist, her name is Pilar, and her Jewish mother. And Pilar has just announced that she is going to go to France on a whim, an adventure. Okay. For this adventure I was planning had little to do with France or anywhere else. It had to do with my nearly overwhelming urge to settle somewhere completely anonymous and foreign. I would take along my clothes, my art supplies, and nothing else. A tabula rasa in the making. Grandpa told me to be interested and curious about the world, I said. He would have understood.
Maybe, and I understand too. I understand that you're young and looking to catch your own shadow. But, sweetie, you really won't fit in.
I know you. You won't find yourself. And you'll never find a decent bagel either.
That's wonderful, Raina. To what degree do your own experiences play into your development of these characters, either your own personal experiences mm-hmm. or the people and the children that you have counseled?
A lot of people ask these questions, and I ask these questions of other authors. The answer is kind of complicated because it really is a salad. You throw everything in, as you know, you throw everything in, what's real, what's not real, imagination, history, personal history, and things that you've observed and witnessed. In this case, I am a social worker. I've been a social worker for 20 years, mm-hmm. and I've worked with children. I am a school counselor as well, though I'm not doing that at present. I've worked with addiction, so I've seen a lot of processes close up. So The professional side is I've worked with children who have suffered from the issues that are explored in this book, from sexual molestation, from a history of secrets and family dysfunction, and I've seen the pain that it causes in kids and how difficult it is for those kids to grow up. The personal side is that I lived in this place. This novel takes place in the south of France, where I lived for 4 years. I did move there not speaking a word of the language,
oh my.
As my character does. So I know what it's like to go mad with frustration because you can't talk.
Yeah, I love the line in there where your character says that she only knows three words of French, oui, non, and escargot. And she's probably saying non, non, non to the guys in the
right.
park.
Right. So that part is autobiographical, though my reasons for going were different. And I'd have to say that I'm very interested in the psychology. I'm interested in characters and interested in what makes them tick. And I really don't like black and white characters because I think people are very multifaceted and there are so many nuances. And so I like to explore the surprises within us as well as outside of us.
The book has a very interesting cover. It shows a child's drawing, basically, of the Eiffel Tower, and yet the person has no mouth. Explain the significance of that.
Well, this book is kind of a lot of books within a book. My protagonist is an artist. She wants to be an artist and a creator of children's stories. And as you said, the cover has the Statue of Liberty and the Eiffel Tower and a boy and a girl, and their faces are blank. And that's because she was sworn to secrecy. I'm not going to give much information, but when she was a child, she drew pictures, and the people, her family, didn't have any faces, didn't have any mouths.
You've said this is something you've seen in your own practice that's actually something children who've been through unpleasant experiences when they're young do. I mean, is that something that teachers should maybe be aware for, to watch out for?
I can't say that I've seen the blank faces per se, but I have seen children's trauma reflected in their drawings. Mm-hmm. I'm also careful not to overanalyze drawings, but you can notice tendencies. So, for example, what I have seen in my professional work is, let's say you have a child who draws the family, and the entire family is on one side of the page, and the daddy's over there in the left corner by himself.
That should be a clue. That's a clue.
And in the case that you have faces that are blank, and you have a bright child who's refusing to talk about it, would make me alarmed. Yeah. And in this, I believe I saw things that are similar, not exactly this, but I definitely have seen kids, their art speaks volumes. And in this case, nobody was really paying attention to her artwork. But there are other children's books within this book.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. You've actually had the character herself, Pilar, do a children's book.
Right.
Tell me about that.
And it will be published in 2014. My protagonist wrote a children's book that I'm actually lifting from the novel. I'm taking the liberty to do that. Mm-hmm. It's called The House That Sneezed, and it's a book for 3 to 5 year olds to help them deal with loss.
Oh, what a wonderful thing to do. I want to add that I'm just so happy to see this book finally in print. I have known Raina for many, many, many years, going back to when we were both in the same fiction writing critique group a long, long, long time ago, and she brought excerpts of this work in progress back then, so it's just great to see it finally hitting print, getting rave reviews, and I understand it's already won an award, so congratulations on that, Raina.
Thank you.
Now, this is not your first published book, certainly. Twice Begun, we've already reviewed on East County Magazine, gave it great reviews. And that opened, again, this mix of poignancy and humor with the protagonist getting ready to celebrate her anniversary and going in and knocking down a box off her husband's closet shelf, looking for something in an outfall, his love letters from some woman in France. And, you know, instead of reacting like most of us might be, she actually goes chasing after him in France, not to get him back, but to get the children's dog that he took when he left her late down the road. So it's just, you just have a marvelous way of creating these situations and these great characters. But what was your inspiration for that book, Raina?
For that book, I've also worked a lot with addicts and recovering addicts, and actually with parolees as well. And I'm always shocked at how they are not what I expect them to be, that people transcend their categories. I mean, some people don't. They stay what they are and they never change or evolve. But I've seen people become so much better because of the mistakes that they've made. So this book is really about the burn of betrayal. It's about change.
Part of it is set during the 2007 wildfires right here in San Diego. Right. So there's that whole dramatic backdrop against the personal story and the new love story that develops later in the novel.
It's about people transcending their categories. Like you don't have to be a fantastic person just because you have all the trimmings.
Yeah.
And you don't have to be a lousy person just because you have a history of, say, addiction.
And your books really transcend categories. We can't pigeonhole them. We can't say this is a romance novel or this is a dramatic novel. It's really not a genre fiction kind of a story.
Right. And I've run into trouble with that. It fits between categories, even though it was a finalist in the San Diego Book Awards in the romance category. It tends not to fit the formulas that go with that as well. Mm-hmm. And as far as the humor goes, it has a lot of East Coast humor in it. I am from New York and had the funniest father in the world who used to make me laugh so hard I would cry. And sort of a Woody Allen type. And I,
that's
so
where
I
come from.
Yeah, so I can't help putting in that kind of a little bit of my humor, which might not be everyone's. Yeah.
So what's next for you? What's coming out of your computer as we speak?
Well, I think that I want to do something different. Mm-hmm. I'm writing a ghost story.
Really?
It's called The Legacy of Shy Moon Lake.
Ooh.
And it's about a town in the mountains where your karma comes back at you really fast.
So a little supernatural.
A little bit supernatural. And there is, as I said, there is a ghost, but there will be a love story as well. I can't help doing that, it seems.
Well, I'm certainly looking forward to reading that, Raina, and it's going to be a delight to have another one of your books to pick up. Now, writing certainly is one aspect of your career, but I understand that you also have a class coming up at the Southern California Writers Conference. Tell us about that.
Right. This will be the second year that I'm teaching a class there. Of course, I've attended the conference forever. Like the people I interview, I love being around other writers. I feel inspired. I get excited. I get ideas. I feel supported. It's a wonderful feeling. So I've always gone to the conference. Last year, I started a class called Character Therapy and You're the Shrink. And I'm doing it again this year. And the idea of the class, again, is a little bit different. I think I tend to look for things that are sort of along the sidelines. You know, there are so many classes on craft and on plot and on marketing and on the new changes in the publishing industry. I wanted to have a class where you had fun and you played with your characters.
Oh, my.
So last year I brought in hats and magazines and all kinds of props. And I brought in different kinds of psychology tests and things. And so I made people
kind of like method acting for
kind of. I wanted people to dress up and play and remember that you're writing because you want to. And writing characters is fun. And let's not get so caught up in it that we don't sit down on the floor and, you know,
enjoy what we're doing. Mm-hmm. It just sounds wonderful. Speaking of the bookshelf segment and all the authors that you've interviewed, how has that influenced you? Have you gotten ideas, drawn inspiration? What stands out most for you from those experiences on the other side of the microphone here?
Well, I think that I've gotten to meet some authors that I've heard about over the years and that I haven't gotten to meet, which is really fun. I get to ask all the questions I've been dying to ask. I feel inspired. I feel encouraged. Most of all, the networking piece that I think is really not much fun to a lot of writers. I mean, there's so much with the, you know, social media, but I'm not a person who likes to sit in front of the computer all the time. And so this is real networking. It's fun. I mean, sitting down, talking, exchanging books and ideas and laughing about commonalities. Now, that makes networking real to me. You know, it's different than social media.
I'm not the only one with writer's block.
Right. And it's so inspiring because everybody is the same. They do it because they love it. People don't write because they, you know, no one writes because they know that they're going to get a quick $1 million. It just doesn't work that way.
Yeah, we wish.
We wish
there was that million bucks, but not very often. it's really a passion that comes from the soul.
It's a passion. I mean, I started when I was 7. My first book was Tiger the Lazy Cat, which I illustrated. It was really lousy on plot, but it had good dialogue. And I wrote 4 novels before I was out of high school. I mean, you do it because you have to. And it's nice when someone reads it, but even if they didn't read it, I'd have to do it.
Yeah, so it's a compulsion in a way.
Really.
Speaking of compulsions, you have some really brilliant ideas, I think, for expanding our coverage of the literary community in a lot of creative ways. One of them is to have East County Magazine and our show put forth a literary contest for local writers and aspiring authors. Tell us about that.
I think contests benefit everyone. It's a way for people to get recognition when they're starting, starting out the gate. It's a way to recognize great effort and great work. It's also a way to network again, which has that human quality. And I think that we, by opening a contest for people to write about something taking place in East County, we'll be highlighting East County, our county.
I love that. It can be contemporary or it could be even a historical setting.
Right.
So there's a lot of opportunities there.
So we'll start with some limited categories, short stories, and then we can have at the celebration event, again, a great networking opportunity, a way to celebrate those authors, maybe hear some works aloud.
Yeah. A literary festival is what we're working toward, folks.
Yes.
Which I think would be very exciting. And Raina's also working hard to line up some stellar judges for this. So if you're looking for an opportunity to have maybe an editor or a book editor or a literary agent, I'm not sure who we're going to have exactly yet, but we're looking for some very prominent names for that. And also I should add, if there's anyone out there that is an author who wants to perhaps table at our literary festival, wants more information on the contest, or organizations that would like to help underwrite either the contest or the literary festival, please get in touch with editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Raina has also been the inspiration for us starting a theatrical group, the East County Magazine Players. And now is as good a time as any for Raina to give us a little preview of the first skit that you're going to be hearing coming up soon on the radio.
Well, we have the centennial
spirits,
yes, celebrating the history, the 100 years of La Mesa. And we got together some professional actors from a couple of different theater groups, Cronus Theater Group and Fall Line Players and some other actors. And we got together and we recorded this play, which was written by Miriam. And it was great fun. And I think I love Garrison Keillor. I love radio shows.
I do too.
And the sound effects. And it was really fun to do the play. Now, I've done theater here in San Diego for, 20 years, and you have to memorize lines and you have to go to lots of rehearsals. This was low work, but great fun, great reward. And you get to play different historical characters and time periods. And we're hoping to have an ongoing series.
Yeah, where we would bring to life different aspects of East County's historical past, all those colorful characters and events that I think so many people really don't know about. And what more fun way to do it than through a dramatization on the radio? So thank
and then
you.
I got
Raina,
to speak with that very low voice of whatever the character was. Lonesome Dove. Yes, my name is Lonesome Dove.
Floozies and everything.
Yes, floozies. Of course, I get that part.
Well, we sure appreciate everything that you do for us, Raina. And where can people get more information about you, the books that you've written, and your upcoming book launch of Silent Bird at Mysterious Galaxy on January 11th?
Okay, well, as I said, the book launch is open to the public. I would love to see people there. And I'll be reading from the book a little bit and signing books.
Very good.
And my website is www.rainamanashi.com. And I have a blog there. And in that blog, I talk about my motivation for writing the books, as well as lots of other things, such as, you know, why I don't know how to play zombies with my teenager. So I really cover a lot of different areas.
That's a pretty wide breadth.
And you can also find information on Raina's book in the books, I should say, in the bookshelf section at eastcountymagazine.org.
Raina, thank you so much for joining us today on Bookshelf, featuring local literary luminaries and some great books to read.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.
This is Ed Brennan with the Sports Report. The Chargers won their playoff game Sunday in convincing fashion by shutting out the Cincinnati Bengals in the second half with the final score of 27-10. The Chargers were aggressive on defense and forced four turnovers without turning it over themselves. They now move on to the divisional round to face the AFC's number one seed, the Denver Broncos. The game will be in Denver, where San Diego won during the regular season. Also moving on in the AFC were the Indianapolis Colts, who will face the New England Patriots at Foxborough. And in the NFC, the Saints move on to face the Seahawks, and the 49ers move on to face the Panthers. The Chargers and Broncos kick off Sunday, January 12th at 1:40 Pacific Standard Time.
This is a public service announcement from East County Magazine. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts provide important information about much more than wildfires. In these winter months, you can receive free alerts via email or Twitter on your mobile phone about emergencies such as flash floods, road closures, heavy snow, and other severe weather alerts, as well as wildfires, traffic reports, and more. You can sign up for this free public service at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Indians.
This is Raina Menashe reporting for East County Magazine and KNSJ. An electrical fire on New Year's Eve morning destroyed a medical clinic in El Cajon. Heartland Fire and Rescue, along with Cal Fire, responded to the blaze at 1321 East Main Street at the corner of East Main and Melody Lane at 8 o'clock in the morning. Crews found heavy smoke coming from the clinic. The building was occupied, but fortunately those inside were able to escape and call 911. No injuries were reported. 15 firefighters battled the blaze, bringing it under control in about 20 minutes. But the building sustained heavy fire and water damage, and the clinic is considered a total loss with an estimated $200,000 in damages.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the San Diego Performance Academy for the use of their studio, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.